Hey listeners, before I get into this episode, I have a quick ask to make. I started this podcast as a research project on how to be a top individual contributor in the product design space. My goal for the show was to learn what it takes to be an individual contributor that is doing amazing, impactful work that they love doing day in and day out and getting paid top dollar while they do it. Becoming that type of individual contributor is the ultimate job security. With close to 100 hours of interview recordings, this has naturally led to the creation of the short-form video articles that synthesize my learnings into 10-minute listens of actionable content. You might recognize these as my morning walk episodes or the hashtag shorts episodes. To my surprise, those episodes have been very well received and listeners have enjoyed the synthesis of what I've learned. This has led to the next chapter of my research project, which is beginning to synthesize what I've learned into a new newsletter called Thinking Out Loud About Design that you can subscribe to right now for free. Thinking Out Loud About Design is an email newsletter and podcast that basically contains all my synthesis for my long-form interviews. It's pure distilled learnings that you can apply to your career immediately. This content is for you if you are a couple years into your career and you're trying to make that move from mid-level to senior designer and senior designer to staff designer. I mainly focus on becoming high-performing individual contributors in the product design industry. A free subscription gives you full access to the newsletter, podcast episodes, and website. You won't have to worry about missing anything because every new edition of the newsletter goes directly into your inbox. So my ask is this. If you have gotten any value out of the way of product design, or if it's helped you in any way or someone you know, please subscribe to Thinking Out Loud About Design and get the distilled learnings on being a staff-level individual contributor. You can find a link to the newsletter in the show notes of every episode of this podcast and on my LinkedIn page. Just look up Caden Damiano. Thanks again for listening and supporting the way of product design. I wouldn't be doing this if you guys weren't listening. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Way of Product Design. I'm Caden Damiano. We know design is valuable, but how can you unlock its true value and tie your design work to business impact? This show interviews product designers, product managers, and tech leads from places like Google, Domo, Divi, IBM, Intuit, and Uber to find out what makes a valuable product designer and how you can be one as well. Hey listeners, today I'm interviewing Michael Cagnard. He is a senior product designer at Medici Land Governance, which is from what I understand, it's a startup within Overstock.
Right? Correct.
So we'll get into a little bit of like what that is and like kind of what you're working on. You could probably mention that as you introduce yourself, but how about you introduce yourself to the listener? Just kind of talk about your journey of like how you got to where you are today and like what you're working on right now.
Awesome. So thanks for having me here first. So to introduce myself, my name is Michael Cagnard. I've been doing product design, solely product design for the last like about 6 years. My background is mostly, I studied graphic design in college. I went to BYU. Graduated from the BFA program in graphic design, but right after college, I got into the whole interaction design, what we used to call interaction design or UI. And that was kind of like one of the things that kind of fascinated me the most is that I could actually change things rather than print and it's done. And if you made a mistake and if it's not reaching the audience or something, then it was done. So that was kind of like my background a little bit like, you know, I started in print design, basically. That's what I started in college. But then I got fascinated with the interaction design and I got into kind of like the UX world, the, you know, like product design. But yeah, a little bit about me. I'm originally from Ecuador. I've been here in the States for about like 17 years, I think. I came to study at BYU, met my wife at BYU. She's from Utah, so we just stayed here. But yeah, thanks for having me. I don't know if you have any specific questions about my background.
Yeah, so I'm just curious like what Medici Land Governance does. I know it's like all I get is like
you know, buzzwords like it's a blockchain startup. And I'm like, whatever that means, you know, but
it's the blockchain startup. Actually, when I met Medici, I didn't know anything about them. But basically, it's land governance. We're trying to get into helping people actually secure land titles. So right now, so for, just to give you kind of like one of the projects that we're working on is in Zambia. And what we're helping the Zambian government and the people is actually parcel some of the land that they have and give those titles to the people so they can basically have ownership. That way we can foster economic inclusion to the people. And, you know, like I'm saying it like very simple, but because like it's a whole process of enumerating and kind of like, you know, defining where the land ends, where the land ends and starts, you know, like if with your neighbors and stuff like that, and then it has to go through like a whole process of approvals from the government. And then all that is stored into the blockchain. So now you have a record that is as secured as anything else, because you have, you know, basically all those land titles into the blockchain. So that is one of the things that we're doing. Right now, we just finished like a pilot project with Zambia, and now we're helping them basically achieve the same thing, but like in a much larger scale. Besides that, we have like a couple of other projects in like Tulum, Mexico, basically the same thing. We just like flew some drones over like Tulum, took some pictures, and then we start kind of like basically enumerating that land. So the Tulum government has, or the municipality will have kind of like all those records into the blockchain. So that's one aspect of the business. The other thing, so we have like a couple of contracts with, let's say, Teton County in Wyoming and Carbon County in Wyoming. And they have like a ton of the records already in, you know, like their database. So now we're securing all those records into the blockchain and we're making them accessible for like pretty much anybody. So like if there's like a lawyer or anybody that needs to actually go and check those records, they can go and check the records and they're like all stored in the blockchain. I don't work in any of that. I'm actually in the more like the research and development type of thing. And because of the research and development, like I'm not able to talk freely about what we're doing, but we are exploring a lot of like, other financial inclusion options for people in Zambia. One of the things that I really like about the company is that we have a very strong social, mission. Like, you know, like we're here to actually help people. It's not just about, obviously we're like a business for profit business, so we're trying to make money. But at the same time, we have like that social construct that, you know, we're trying to help the people in Zambia to have like a little bit more like financial inclusion. And the way that we're doing right now specifically is through the land titles.
That's super cool. Reminds me of a book. It's like, it's called The Mystery of Capital by Ernesto de Soto. And he's from, I think, Peru. But basically the whole gist of the book is like, why are third world or developing countries not succeeding like America? Like, they have capitalism now. What's going on? And it all comes down to property ownership.
Yep.
That's it. Like, that's how America is wealthy, is because you could own your land, you could own your house, and there's a legal system to protect your ownership. And correct. You could get loans for your business backed by your house if you need to. And then that's how you actually develop.
You can use your land as collateral. But mm-hmm. in these places, they don't have the rights to the land. Yeah. They have the land, and it's been in their families for like, in many cases, for like ever. But they don't have the actual title of the land or is in dispute. So we're basically helping them gain a little bit more financial inclusion by giving them the titles. And as you're saying, like basically the premise of that book is completely correct. If the people have a title in hand, they can use that land as a collateral to get like a business loan or literally like a loan for, you know, like go to school or anything else. But if you don't have that title, it's pretty hard to actually use it as a collateral.
Yeah, that's a really cool problem to solve. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Medici Latin Governance, you heard it here on the podcast, is a cool company to work for.
It's actually like a really good, I was pretty happy to find them, and their mission is amazing. So I like that.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a question I ask every I try to ask every guest, but you know, Michael, what concerns you the most about the design industry? We're going to get a little bit more abstract, get out of the whole like economic discussion here, but
yeah, that is like a really good question. There's like several things that kind of like worry me, but one of the things that we were talking a little bit before is like the basically the lack of definition around what is to be a designer, what is to be like in the design industry. You just hear the buzzwords like interaction design and UX design and marketing design and designer. And a lot of the times, like, people don't even know what that is, or we don't even know as UX designers or product designers. Sometimes we don't even know what we are or what we're supposed to be. So that is one of the things that is kind of like one of the concerns that I have, that we need to kind of like rally around the definition of titles and kind of like basically what we do as product designers.
Yeah. I know that you've been involved in hiring in your career. I've seen your recruiting activity in the Valley. You tried to poach one of Progressive Leasing's designers at one point, right?
But trying to poach a lot of people. Yes.
Yeah. You're a poacher. But
I am.
So is this kind of some angst that comes from your role as a hiring manager in your career, or is it like, what are the shortfalls of not defining like the profession a certain way?
I think it's more than as a hiring manager. I think defining is actually just to create like an expectation or between the people that is hiring to the person that is coming on board. Right now, you know, you said basically like, what is one of the problems with like the design industry? And that itself is like super vague. You're not actually defining like, you know, like a what level of, you know, the design. If you think about it, like design is pretty much everything that we breathe and see, and everything around us is design, right? And we're talking about it specifically in products. Okay, like at least we narrowed it a little bit. Like now we're talking about software. We're talking about like mobile apps and stuff like that. But even then, it is not really well defined because, you know, when I say like I'm looking for a product designer, some people might actually understand, hey, they're looking for someone to do research. Some other people might understand they're looking for someone to do the UI work. Some other people might understand they're looking to do some like architecture structure for like the mobile app. And it's, you know, like a UX designer or product designer is like very vague. And then you see a lot of people like that have a lot of like skills in the visual design, but they don't have like skills in the research. Or you see a lot of people that on the flip side, they're like amazing researchers that call themselves product designers because they are, but they don't have like visual skills. And then we have kind of like the problem solvers and, you know, things like that. So one of the things that we've, or at least I've tried to do is give a little bit more perspective into what we're going to be working on and what is the type of person that we want. So if it's someone that is going to be doing like a lot of like user research, you know, we will say like it's like a user designer or like a user experience designer, heavy on research. And then we give some examples of the type of research that we're trying to accomplish. Or if we want some like a more like a UI designer, then we will say like it's like a user designer heavy on the UI. So I don't know if that makes sense. It is like a challenge to actually define the scope of work that a user designer will do. But yeah, it's one of the challenges that we need to face, I think, and give a little bit more clarity around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like to solve the problem, you need to acknowledge that there are specialties within the field. Like, it's just something you can't ignore. Like, you can't just say UX designer, product designer. I mean, there's definitely generalists. I think I would be like considered a generalist in that regard, but there's always like a part of the process that someone gravitates more towards because it is such a broad end-to-end process. So like for you, like based off your hiring activity and stuff, like what are kind of like the main like areas people tend to focus on? Like how would you break up the end-to-end design process from like idea or like from business problem to well fleshed out spec?
I see like a couple of like different camps. There's like the one camp, the one that I'm coming from, is a lot of like visual designers turn into interactive designers. They just heard that there's like this cool thing that you can start doing like mobile apps and websites and applications and software and stuff like that. So they're like visual designers that turn themselves into more like interactive designers. They want to solve the problems for like the screen and the people using that. And then there's the other camp of people that I've seen very heavily is more like in the psychology realm, that they're trying to get into kind of like the psychological problems that people have facing, you know, like computers and mobile phones and things like that. So they come in from like a completely different background. It's not visual at all. And then, you know, it's more kind of like trying to kind of like come up with a persona and trying to do like some of the research and stuff like that. So those are kind of like the two camps that I've seen heavily on. A lot of the people try to do just kind of like the front end, the beauty of the site or the beauty of the mobile app. And a lot of the people are kind of like thinking behind like, why is that person doing that? Why is that person like clicking on that? Or how can we help them like achieve this, you know, different goal and stuff like that? Does that answer your question? That's kind of like the two different camps that I've actually seen heavily on. With the flourishment of UX camps, like Dev Mountain, and there's actually another one that I can remember here in the Valley.
V-School?
Was that?
V-School? Like V, like letter V?
The V-School, like, no, there's one, another one here in Utah. Anyways, like, I've seen a lot of those portfolios, and they're, like, heavy on the research, heavy on the personas, heavy on the strategy behind. But sometimes they like a little bit of kind of like the visuals, right? And that is very valuable, and that is something that we could actually, you know, use a lot. But yeah, that's kind of like the main two areas that I've seen people kind of like trying to focus on. But if we're talking about definition of roles and stuff like that, there's like so many other things like in between, like animation within the apps. How can you use a little bit of delight into kind of like engage the user and gamification and things like that, that a lot of the times we don't even think about. And a lot of the times people are not even concerned about or trying to specialize themselves into. But anyways, I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, yeah, you're identifying that there's people that are more concerned about like all the decision making that leads to the final design.
Correct.
I think people like to say that they're like kind of traditional UXers, you know, Nielsen Norman UXers. And then there's the people that are concerned with designing flows and you know, kind of like the interface between the customer.
Pushing the pixels to make them pretty.
Yeah. Like, which is the fun work for sure. Like it's, but like for me, it's like, especially if you're like, you're, you know, a newer designer, like you kind of, you have to pick one of those and specialize. And if you specialize like in the behavioral aspect of it, it kind of hurts your prospects of getting hired because, you know, like managers are kind of looking at like your visual skills more coming in at the beginning. So, I mean, I don't know that I don't know if that is a problem because I think, you know, it is, you should have a handle on layout and typography, like a baseline, like level going into this profession. But I don't know, it's tough because there's a lot of like really great UX designers that might not have like the best visual skills. And I'm one of them. And, you know, like my mentor, former manager who recruited me, like he went at bat for me to get me into my, like one of my jobs, and it worked out just fine. And I ended up learning visual design anyways, but, it was just like, I don't know. I mean, there is a problem that I see that, like, you know, there is like a preferential treatment towards more of like the people with graphic design backgrounds. But the problem I see is that they tend not to think systematically or holistically. They're very like focused on like the linear flow. Right. And even though it's still valuable and it's important and it's actually necessary, if you want to design software, you need like an interface designer. Like I think we need to start compartmentalizing into specialties now.
You actually brought a really good point. Early on my career, I was heavily biased on people having very good design chops. And when I say design, it was like the visual chops. And I was concerned about like their visuals. And I was thinking like, you know, I can teach them research. I can teach them how to like, you know, do personas and, you know, like create all this kind of like the business plan behind and why are we doing this and stuff like that. But I actually realized that that is wrong in the sense that I was biased on, because of my background, I was biased on, you know, the visual design. And I was not paying attention to kind of like their problem solving and, you know, kind of like their ability to actually determine like a business plan and like a business solution and, you know, kind of like the architecture behind something visual. So yes, I think that you pointed something that we sometimes specifically, if you have like a visual background, a lot of the times you're going to be bias on hiring people with visual backgrounds, thinking that you can teach the other side easier than the visuals. What I've come to realize, though, is they're both as valuable. Like people that come without a visual background, they can learn visual. They can learn typography. They can learn layout. They can learn hierarchy. They can learn all those little like principles about like visual design. They can learn as easily as visual designers can learn the whole background, like, you know, the actual personas and creating stories and, you know, like speaking to the business people and, you know, like a business plan and things like that. So yeah, you're right. And I'm guilty of that. I was guilty of that when I was hiring a few years ago. I basically passed on some people. I remember having like a conversation with one guy and we hanged up and I told him, I was like, you're like amazing problem solver and thinker, but I cannot hire you right now because you don't have like the visual skills. And I missed on a really, really, really good potential person to work with me because I was not valuing that. So I've come to learn that, you know, both aspects are really good and both aspects could be taught. I could teach visuals. I could teach how to do research, you know, like different things. Going back to the whole, you said something, I thought it was kind of funny. You said like, but that's not the fun part. Actually, you know, like some people might think that like the research is like the boring side. Right now I'm doing like something that I didn't think that I would be doing like 6 months ago. I haven't touched like a UI piece, you know, like literally like I did like a minor UI piece, like, you know, some user flows and stuff like that. And then just like a very minor thing. But then most of what I've been doing lately is a lot of research and just like trying to talk to people and trying to come up with like solutions for like a problem that we see. And you know, like I didn't think that I was going to enjoy it, but I've actually been enjoying it. Doing the research, talking to people and reading a bunch of different articles about something that I had no idea before. I didn't even know that I was interested in this. It has been like pretty entertaining to me and fascinating because like now I'm thinking like, hey, I thought that I wanted to do a lot of visual design, but now I'm like, yeah, actually I am creating a product from the very, very, very beginning. All the way from like, we don't even know what we're creating. I'm talking to people and I'm discovering things. Like I'm trying to come up with like we have like a problem that we're trying to solve, obviously. And you know, I'm doing a lot of research around that and it's been fascinating. So again, like, I think like the definition goes a little bit into setting the expectation when you're coming into a workplace What are you going to be working on? How is that going to be related to everybody else? What are the skills that we're looking for? So, you know, to determine if the person is like a right fit or not for the job.
Yeah, no, you know what? Like, I just had this idea. There's these documentaries on Amazon Prime, like the All or Nothing documentaries, and they're sports documentaries. And the ones that I'm fascinated with are the ones that have to do with like English Premier League football teams. You know, like the culture of the, like the, you know, soccer for people that are ignorant of what they call soccer around the world. It's football, English football. Like,
this is like football.
Yeah, like Premier League is like the culture around it, like how like every neighborhood in England has their own professional team. I just love watching the documentaries on the culture, like how the business operates, how they build the team, how they recruit, and like how they treat like hiring talent as like a business decision, right? Like it's not just a game. It's like, yeah, you know, it's a business. And, you know, and in soccer, you know, you could say like, hey, I'm a soccer player, but I am preferential to striking, or I'm preferential to defense, or we got the midfielders, or kind of both, right? And you know, like they don't put people in a box. You know, like if a good coach recruits talent for strengths and puts you in, like they hire you for a specific role. Like, you know, I'm hiring you because we need a good goalie. Like, mm-hmm. They're not just hiring like a generalist, right? Like you kind of have to specialize for the teamwork to work, you know? And I just thought about that too. I'm like, well, you know, I don't think the issue is like designers need to learn everything, even though I think that's something to aspire to be like well-rounded as a generalist, right? Especially for if you're going down the management track and you're hiring, you should be good. You should have a proficiency at everything. You should at least be a B player in everything. You don't have to be like an A player at one place. But I think, like you mentioned, like that if you're like an A player, like a visual design, and you become a manager, like you're going to be biased towards visual design because you're not able to know how to ask the right questions to assess if you could take a hit on visual design to hire someone with more business savvy, right? So it's not really like, it's not a problem of like, okay, like, because I don't want the podcast, this episode, to be like, okay, designers, you gotta learn everything because like managers don't know what they're looking for. So just, you should just be everything to them. And it should be like, really, this should be a challenge on managers to be like, you should be able to assess like what the needs are of the project and the team, so you know how to hire the talent, right?
Yeah, I think with that in mind, with that analogy of the soccer, the team and the managers and like everything, if you're looking for a job, you should actually know your strengths and your weaknesses. I interviewed for a job about a year ago, and they point blank asked me like, "Will you be comfortable doing this?" And it was basically like minor coding. And I said, I could learn a little bit of coding, but that's not where my passion is. So you're going to be wasting money in me coding rather than hiring an actual developer that will do like 10 times faster and 10 times better. I could learn because I think I'm a smart guy, but like it's not where my passion is. So like I know my abilities, I know my limitations. And it, like, you know, for people looking good at, make a list of things that you think that you could learn easily and that you will enjoy, and make a list of things that you're like, that is not where my heart is. I will have a hard time doing that. And I believe that an interview is actually like a two-way street. Like, is the manager interviewing the person, but the person is also interviewing the company to see if I'm a good fit. Every time that I interview with a company, I ask them like, what is basically the profile that you're looking for? And then like they will say, we're looking for this, 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 and that. And many times I've actually said like, you know what, I'm not that person. You know, like because you're looking for something or someone that is, you know, like slightly different, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to kind of like come into that play. Which is also it goes to the point that like you're limiting a little bit your growth and stuff like that. But again, like if you're completely sure what you want to do, where you are, who you are, you can interview the employer easily. You can interview the manager and ask them like specific questions. How do you see this role playing? How do you see the impact of this person bringing into the team? And then put yourself into those shoes. Am I going to be able to do that? Will I enjoy, if I'm not up to that, like the level that they're looking for, would I enjoy actually stretching myself a little bit more to that? Maybe they're looking for like an animator, like, you know, someone that knows a lot of like After Effects. I don't do, like, I know a little bit of After Effects, but like, I don't do any of that. But if they're looking for that and I'm interested in learning on that, I'll tell them that. I'll say like, hey, you know what? I'm very interested in animation, like little micro interactions into the app. I would love to learn. If you give me the chance, I'll prove myself. So it goes like a both ways, right? You interview the employer will interview you. And if you don't think that you're going to be up for the challenge, be upfront. That will solve a lot of like the disappointments once you get hired in a company.
Right. I think, yeah, I mean, in Premier League football, like the players know what they're worth. They know.
Yep.
Yeah. Like they know what they're what kind of jobs they're going for. And I think once you've defined that for yourself and you've established yourself in the industry as like, this is what I do, that's kind of like when you start getting recruited for specific things. If like you're successful, like your brand is like, I specifically handle hard, complex systems problems. I'm not interested in making marketing pages. So like for me, that's basically like my specialty is like, I definitely am a generalist. I've put a lot of money into making sure that I could push pixels when it comes down to it. But that's not like the part of the process that drives me the most, you know, and like knowing like I could actually help, you know, make sure that you're solving the right problems and that it's more of like getting ahead of your development team so that they have like the right problems ready to go when they're ready to go. Is like what I chose. And, you know, by doing that, it's limited the amount of places I could apply to because, you know, that's not like, not a lot of people are like looking for that, right? And there's certain stages of companies need to look at, right? Like some companies are way established and they just need someone, like they already done a ton of research on what needs to be done and they just need to bring someone on that can execute, right? But knowing that, like understanding like what part of the process you like the most is going to make the job search a lot less stressful, right? Even though it might draw it out longer, you're gonna find out what you're good at, and it's not only going to be good for like the company when they hire you because you're the right fit, but it's also good for your career because you're not like at a false start step of your career. Because I know a lot of people like they say yes to anything, right? And then they're like, "Oops, that was a mistake," and then they just wasted like 6 months to a year of their time in their career, not growing in what they're the best at.
So So I'm going to agree with 90% of what you said.
Oh, awesome.
I'm going to disagree with the last part, like the 10%, like when you said like sometimes you waste time. I actually take it like every single one of those instances that I think like, hey, that was a major bummer. Like I don't fit in here. I actually take those as a learning opportunity. So you can kind of like be a little bit more aware of who you are as a designer and what you're looking for. And those are going to be like some red flag questions that you're going to ask the new employer when you're like interviewing and you're going to be like, hey, I had a hard time with that. I'm going to ask and try to find out a little bit more on that. It could be like as easily as just the team culture. It could be, or just like the actual work you're going to be doing. Everybody has one of those jobs that you're like, I want that job. And once you got it, you're like, oh man, I completely screwed it up. This is not for me. And then 4 months later, you're out. I cannot do this. I've had a couple of those in my resume. Like if you scan, it's like 4 months, 6 months, I have a couple of those. But I've taken that into the next time that I'm interviewing, I just take that as a learning opportunity and be like, okay, I need to know how do you handle these situations. I need to know how to do this or that. So I agree with everything that you said, except for like kind of like the wasting of time. I think is more like a learning opportunity to realize who you are in, you know, as a designer.
But you got to figure it out somewhere.
Correct. Like if you're not presented with these uncomfortable situations, you're not going to know that those are uncomfortable for you. On the flip side of everything that we're talking as well, I do think that people need to specialize in something, right? But something that you mentioned before as well, you also need to be very aware of like your surroundings and be okay with that. You know, with the example that I gave before, like I do not want to code at all. I want to learn how to code, but I don't want to do that. I can speak very fluently with my developers. I meet with my developers on a weekly basis, with my front-end developers and my back-end developers, like because that is part of my job. I need to be aware of, you know, like their lingo, basically, so I can communicate with them. So yes, like I'm not interested in actually doing their job, like coding and stuff like that, but I need how to communicate with them as well. And that is something that a lot of the times, like, even though you're kind of like specializing in one aspect of the whole process, you need to be kind of like aware of like everything else around. You need to kind of like get your feet wet on those aspects, even if you're not like fully diving into that one aspect of the design process.
Yeah, that's, I think, being conversationally fluent in the other skill sets, I think you should be conversationally fluent in everything.
Yep.
Product design. Like, you should be able to speak to UI elements. So even though you're not generally like making the pixel perfect designs, you can talk with maybe a stronger UI designer about like how you feel like the design might miss the mark, and without it getting subjective, right? And I definitely see that. Like, I think the biggest confidence boost doing the Shift Nudge course wasn't that, oh, sweet, now I could take those jobs where I could design a design system, or, oh, sweet, like I could actually build like a whole like visual identity and design direction from scratch. I'm like, no, I still don't want to do that. I don't want to design the app icon, you know, but
correct.
Oh my gosh. Like my speed to implementation, is faster. And I'm more comfortable in design critiques now because I could speak to like, oh, well, this kind of feels like it's not optically aligned. Like I have the vocabulary now. Mm-hmm. I have the words I could say. And that's the biggest ROI of like learning something that I wasn't strong in, is that I could speak to it in a very professional, well-articulated way, not because I'm going to do that job more.
Yep, I agree with that. It's kind of interesting. I taught people how to find jobs in Brazil. This is like 14 years ago. And one of the things that I, like part of the course, something that I taught him was literally, you know, like don't try to be one of those like do it all type of people, because like those do it all type of people, a lot of the times fail to actually do something really well. But try to be one of those people that actually knows enough that you could actually contribute, but specialize in a couple of things that you're very passionate about. And those type of people are going to be like the most successful. And on the flip side, we've been talking about kind of hiring managers and like recruiting and all that. And companies also need to basically understand who are they hiring and why are they hiring? What is the profile of person that they're looking for? And be very careful with, you know, when you're hiring, look for that type of person. So yeah, it goes kind of like both ways for mm-hmm. the people looking for a job, for the people giving a job. They both need to kind of like, you know, be very mindful in what they're looking for in their next hire. I guess this will kind of like derail the conversation. I don't want to derail too much, but
oh, go ahead.
There's a lot of like different, kind of like skills that you're looking for in like an employee, right? So there's like the hard skills, there are the soft skills. And be very mindful in exactly what you're looking for in the skills that they come as a professional skills, but also the as a person. Like, what is the type of person that you're looking for? Are you looking for someone that is a little bit more quiet, that is going to kind of like be okay working under someone's direction and not questioning? Or do you want someone that is going to question that? Because a lot of the times, like, designers will also get into that trap, into, you know, like, you don't know specifically kind of like the culture that you're getting into, and you might have a problem with that as well. So skill wise, I will say companies, be careful into select the skills that you're looking for, and people looking for a job, know your skills, and also literally ask those questions. If you're not asked those questions during the interview, go and ask them. It's okay for you to have a lot of questions about the culture, the projects, the work, the people you're working on. I interviewed a couple years ago to a company. It was for like a management position. I literally told the person interviewing me, I said, I'm going to drag this interview process a little bit longer because I want to meet with everybody that is going to be working under me. I want to meet with everybody that is going to be working alongside with me. And I'm going to meet with everybody that is going to be above me, because I want to meet everybody that is basically going to interact with my position. We drag it along for like about a month. I ended up declining the offer. But, you know, people have the right to know specifically what you're getting into when you're looking for a job. Interview the interviewer as much as you can.
Well, that's really interesting. Like, if you feel like you need more, right? I think that kind of shows, like, that's like a good, like, sign, right, to the company. Like, hey, I'm willing to spread this out longer. I mean, you know, obviously, like, I think there's interest in us working together. I would like to do some more due diligence, and that's kind of cool that you're turning your maybe the basic, like, typical four rounds of interviews into maybe like more rounds, but it's on your terms.
It was like a really good. For me, I learned a lot about the team and the company, and ultimately that was like the decision for me not to pursue it anymore. But at the end of the day, I'm glad to find out things once I was like there working, and I'll be like, oh crap, I should have done a little bit more due diligence before. It was really cool of them that they allow me to do that. So props to them, because I asked them, can I meet with people about me? Can I meet with people on the side of me? Can I meet with people, you know, under me? And they allowed me to do that. And it was really cool that they were so willing and open. They were so sure about their culture and what they were doing that they were like, yeah, you know, who do you want to meet with? Like, here's the people around, like, pick who you want to meet. So that was really cool of them. Ultimately, it didn't work out for us, but I still have respect for them for allowing me to do that. So.
Yeah. This is a hybrid question. I'm going to bake it into the last question. Like, the last question I usually ask guests is like, if you have a time machine, like, what would you do? If you like, you go back and change something in your career, like, what would you do better, right? And you're free to like ask that question freeform, but I'd like to start this line of questioning because, you know, you're right. I'm wrong. I'm definitely wrong. Like there's no such thing as like wasted effort, as long as it's not an expensive loss, right? There's no wasted effort in like, you know, getting in the wrong company and then leaving after 4 months. I was wrong. Like that's definitely something you can see as a learning opportunity. Actually, I think 2020 is a great example of a lot of missed opportunities that turned out all right. And you might have wasted. Yeah. I think we've all wasted a couple months this year on a false start. Or like a missed opportunity because of, you know, 2020 related issues. But I think a lot of people are learning what they value the most in life and, you know, are grateful for like the opportunities that have come up because of it. Right. And you've mentioned that you've had a couple false starts on your resume, right?
Yep.
So like, let's say like, you know, you had a time machine and you could go back, like what, could you do like an instant replay type scenario? Like what did you feel like you could have done better to evaluate that beforehand? Like evaluate fit in those situations.
What I could have done better to evaluate those situations. the main thing that comes to mind is literally like a stop. Stop and just kind of like take one step back. In both situations that I'm telling you about, I was like so eager. I was focusing solely in one aspect of my profession. And that is not even money, because like money is like money was like a not the deciding factor into those two jobs that I'm telling you. But I was like so focused, like I want to work for that guy. Like, you know, like he's one of my design heroes. I want to work for that guy. So no matter what else, I just want to work for him. Doesn't matter, right? So that was one of them. The other one was the type of work I was going to be doing. So, and I was like in love. They were like, hey, we have this client. It's, you know, and I was like, man, that's exactly what I want to do. But I was not considering everything else as a picture. And I failed to literally like ask them hard questions about how is the culture here? What are the expectations that you have for me? What are the expectations that you have for the other designers? How often do you meet with the designers? How often do you meet with your, like, you know, with your directors? How is, you know, like some of those questions that it could have told me a lot about, hey, you know, this is kind of like how we never interact with each other. You're going to be on your own. You're, you know, things like that, that are like at the end of the day, bug me. Cause I was like very focused. Like I was enamored into like, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I want, that I failed to take one step back, look into the bigger picture and start like asking some hard questions to the company, into expectations, into how's that going to be managed? How is that going to be solved? If something like this were to happen, what are the steps that you're going to take in order to, you know, like solve, like, what is the team culture? How many times do you, you know, meet yourselves and things like that? I did not ask any of those questions. They like me. I was like, okay, good. You like me. I like you. Cause I was very focused in just one aspect of the job. So take a look back into more aspects, culture, you know, like schedule, culture, the work itself, you know, like the other people that are going to be working on, things like that. So I will completely change that. I will ask other questions. I will start focusing on things that are like valuable to me. I'm not naming any names or anything like that. But just to give you kind of like an example, I had like a really, I didn't like it. And that was one of the reasons why I left, literally. So my wife called me and I picked it up and it was like a 5-minute conversation. And then did you actually clock out? And this is not a hourly job. This is like a salary job, right? Yes. So this is not like an hourly job. This is like me as a professional, not me in college, right? And he comes on, he's like, do you clock out from the client that you're working on for that time that you were talking to your wife? I was like, no, because it was just like a couple minute conversation. And he's like, okay, you need to go and basically kind of like readjust that. I was
5 minutes?
Oh, it was not even 5 minutes. Literally, it was like, hey, what do you want for dinner? Do you want to pick it up? Okay, cool. And, you know, like it was maybe like 3 minutes. Like, how is it going? Blah, blah. And then I had to go and like readjust like my clock schedule for like that client. And I was like, that is very strange. And like things like that start happening like more often. So, you know, like then my next job, I start asking questions like that. I was like, so how's the culture here? Like how's, you know, like if I need to take some time off to go to the doctor, but you know, like things like that. And then it was apparent that I will be a much better fit for the other company that was a lot more relaxed on that. And that type of scrutiny did not play very well with me. So I was not a good fit for that company. I have friends that work there still that love that, you know, like that level of being super micromanaged. But that was not me. So I needed to understand that there are some companies and there are some things that will get into my skin enough that I cannot work for that anymore, right? So yeah, just like take a step back, look into the bigger picture, not just what you're enamored of the job, a lot of the times it's going to be money. They're going to pay me that much money and I'm just going to go like, it doesn't matter anything else. Like the money is going to be good enough. Is it going to be really good enough? If you're going to be completely miserable for like $10,000 more a year, is it really worth it? So, you know, pick one stack, look into the bigger picture, look into what your priorities as a person, as a worker is, and then start asking those hard questions and then find out whether you're going to be good or not, you know, like a good fit for that position.
You know, that's really interesting.
Does that answer the question?
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, well, for me, I thought that was really interesting that one of your false starts was, I need to work for this person. Like, I need to be their understudy or something like that.
Yep.
That's huge because I've made a lot of decisions like that where it worked out for me, luckily. But there's definitely like, you know, learning new things about the company after the fact. And
yep.
Like, I mean, if it was bad, you know, it wouldn't have worked out. And that person could leave, right?
Yep.
You could get hired and then they're like, oh, found a better opportunity. See ya. Like, you know, and at the end of the day, if it's not their company, like that person that you wanted to work under, they're just a normal professional like you. And if they could find a better opportunity, like they're not loyal to that company, you know?
Yep.
And, so, you know, and I would say like the big insight from that, to me is that, you know, usually the instinct is, okay, well, give me like a list of 10 questions I need to ask my employer. And it's like, no, that's not the case. It's find out what you value the most in your work and your job. And you write the script based off your values of like what you want answered. For example, yeah, like the micromanagement thing, like I've definitely lost out. Like I've definitely weeded out companies I've talked to where I just tell them straight up. I'm like, well, like I want to make sure that I'm going to be given a say on like what we prioritize. Will I be able to actually do some due diligence as well? Cause I don't want to be told like how to do my job. And they're like, oh, yep. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, like we just know what needs to be done and you just need to execute on it. And I'm like, okay, well, there's plenty of designers that like doing that, but I don't. And I got criticism for rescinding my applications to some companies. But at the same time, it's like, I it's not worth my happiness to continue interviewing with this company if I know, like, in my gut, like, I'm not gonna like one company was absolutely. Like, the CEO still comes in and like helps out with like the product. And I'm like, no, he's a CEO. He doesn't have time to get granular, you know? It's like, but no, that's, I think that's really good. It's like, find out what you value. It's a little bit the same thing with hiring managers. Like, find out what you value. What's going to be valuable for this new hire? And then you create the line of questioning based off those values, not seeing how they handle, like, a whiteboard challenge. Because I don't think those whiteboard challenges really show, like, what a person's capable of. It's asking them questions specific to what you need in the job. And then you're going to have a gut feeling if, like, that person does fit that role. I know that's not really helpful for junior designers where like at the beginning of your career you just need something. But I don't know.
Yeah, with junior designers is like go and test the waters and then you'll find out quickly what you appreciate and what you don't. Yeah. And then make a list of those things so next time you ask that. About the whiteboarding, I just kind of chuckle because the best designer that I've ever hired in my career, I gave her this like whiteboarding exercise. And, you know, like the team had like this very specific thing that she needed to come up with. And she did awesome. She didn't go through kind of like, she didn't come with the conclusion that we wanted her to come to, but she still did awesome. Like, you know, she kind of like walked us through the whole thing, blah, blah. We ended up giving her the job, but the first thing that she told me after like she got hired, she's like, I hated that. She's like, if I'm the manager, I will never, ever put a person through that. I was like, okay, valid point. And, you know, like we didn't hire her for like the whiteboarding experience. We hired her for like many other reasons. And literally she was the best designer that I've ever hired in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was like, literally, she's like, that was the worst thing that you could possibly do. And I will never do anything like that to anybody that I will hire. So
Yeah.
yeah, maybe they don't work.
I mean, it's not like, I think it's, I don't know, like it's what you said about, I'll agree with 90% of what you said, and then the last 10% I'll disagree
And
with
you'll disagree.
is like the that they're looking for a specific answer, like they're testing you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not how design works. Like
Yep.
there's never a right answer. And people like me, I just don't do well on like whiteboard exercises because it's just a lot of like guessing games. And I'm like, well, this is not how it would actually work if I worked for you guys, by the way. Like it's that, I mean, I'm sure you came to that conclusion as well. Like, I think
Yeah.
if it's like open-ended and you just kind of hear them like talking out loud and you're kind of like hearing like what they assume, then it's valuable. But I have heard of companies where they're like looking for a specific thing in those exercises.
That was my mistake. And I will be one of the first people to actually tell you, yes, that was a mistake, that we were looking for a specific answer at the end. We did ended up hiring her, not because of her whiteboarding. Actually, in part of the whiteboarding, because like she walked us through the whole thing, like she was like very descriptive in what she was doing, and like very good documentation, and like, okay, these are the things that I've tried, these are the things that I'm going to try. She was really good at that. But overall, okay, so just to give you an idea, like the next people that we were hiring, we did not give like a whiteboarding experience. It was like a completely different, more like, we're going to see your portfolio and we're going to talk about the experience. We're going to give you our expectation for this role. We're going to try to understand as much as possible from where you're coming from. But we didn't do like a whiteboarding experience for that.
Yeah.
We actually kind of learn on that.
My actually I had a very similar experience at Progressive Leasing. I was like the last design challenge candidate. I did the design challenge and I had a very similar experience. I didn't come up with what they wanted, but like the process was good and so they still brought me on. And after the fact I'm like hearing like the behind the scenes of after I did it 'cause I thought I crushed it. And then apparently like it was very lucky that my manager like advocated for me because I thought it was a good interview and I thought I had a very solid process. And then at the end of it, they're like, but it's visual skills. And then he's like, well, that's your fault. You wrote the prompt to be research focused. Like, and then they stopped doing it. So I'm very proud to be a person that broke that part of the process. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's really just let's look at your portfolio. Let's hear you talk to your work. But I mean, I think the conclusion, the nugget from this podcast, this interview, is for me that it should be like an aligning of values. Like you should be asking value-based questions both ways in the interview process.
Absolutely.
And then you define the role.
If there's something that I will recommend, yep. If it's something, I think you cut up. Maybe my internet was wrong. That's why I started interrupting you, because I thought that you were stopped, but you didn't. So sorry about that.
Don't worry about it.
But yeah, absolutely. Like the one thing that I will tell hiring managers is literally define specifically who you're looking for, so you're not having like a false expectation. Like interview and re-interview and ask hard questions to the people that you're hiring. And for the people looking for a job, whether you're like a junior, medium, senior, like management level, wherever you are, literally ask those questions as well. Find yourself, determine what you want to do in your career, and literally ask those hard questions to the people. So you're getting into like a position that is. Try to minimize the expectation gap. That's what I will say about that. Interview both ways. Interviewees can interview the managers. Ask, and keep asking questions. That will show me, if I'm a hiring manager, that will show me that you're actually very thoughtful and you know what you're looking for. And even if it doesn't work out, I will be very pleasantly surprised if you ask me hard questions. Because I will know that at least you put some thought into your career. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think it's good that there is a lack of definition because there's so much that goes into making product that I think the broadness kind of helps, because then you get to kind of design the roles you like, right? And I think that initial interview process is kind of like a negotiating table to talk about what you're going to work on and how you're going to do it. And, you know, I like flexibility. I don't like being micromanaged. What's your guys' position on that? Like, I'm really liking this remote thing in COVID. Like, what's your policy on that? You know, it's a, Michael, this has been a really good for me. Like, I'm getting a lot out of this. It just makes me really think, like you could at least like front load a lot of that risk mitigation when you're interviewing for a role, just by just really thinking about what you want and just not being afraid to talk about it. So thank you.
Yeah. No, not a problem. I enjoy talking to you about this as well.
Cool.
Something that has been on my mind actually about how can we help, you know, narrow the gap of expectation between employees and employers, and how can we literally match the right people for the right job. So
yeah.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for being on. You have a good one. Hey, listeners. Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Way of Product Design. If this episode resonated with you, please share it with your network and write a couple lines on why you found it useful. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to help the show grow, please leave a review on Apple or Google's podcast platforms. As always, thanks for listening. You have a good one.